Welcome back, Switchcast Season 5. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, here with my co-host, Tyler Sanders. We are the automotive news and entertainment show that's not just for car people. And off camera, we have Ethan Huffnagel, the executive assistant to the regional producer.
Promotion again?
Yes. Oh, it's just a title, though, that doesn't come with a pay raise. It's really just ceremonial.
Say it better not.
Also off camera is our friend Tim Neely of Tim's Enthusiast Garage.
Subscribe.
He was having
already? Tim, come on. At least wait a little bit. Let us get the juices flowing.
He was having a bad hair day, so he only wanted his voice to be on camera.
Smooth.
Hold on. What?
So smooth.
How many of those gin and tonics have you had, Doug?
Well, whatever. At least he's not wearing a wig, Tyler.
All right. All right. That's fine.
All right. Getting right into it. The Ferrari that was stolen, last week, but that we covered on last week's podcast, the 2019 Ferrari 812 Superfast. 812 Superfast, that am I conflating? Is it the, yeah, F12. Yeah, F12, then 812 Superfast.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, okay. I do know my Ferraris, I promise. It was stolen by a transporter. It has been recovered.
Seriously?
The rightful owner has gotten it back.
I thought it was gone forever.
So did the owner. He literally
told
said
you.
That.
He's like,
that's gone. I think he was discouraged. Some people read into that and inferred that he was maybe in on it. That was definitely not the case. But let's talk about, one, how we got it back and how it happened. Dug into the transport company a little bit, but the mechanics of how the vehicle was actually stolen and what everybody can learn from it in order to not have it stolen, because it's really not that hard to prevent your vehicle from being stolen by transporters, but it takes dealers and brokers actually doing their job and maybe going a little bit above and beyond. Maybe.
So did you help find this? Were you involved?
Not really.
Oh, okay.
I can't take any credit. There's another dealer that's trying to take credit, but really it came down to the fact that the vehicle had low jack on it.
Oh.
So it had a tracking system, and that doesn't always work because thieves are pretty good at disabling tracking systems. So he had up-to-date GPS, which he did not put in his post. He didn't want that getting out there because, again, sometimes the element of surprise is best when you're trying to catch a thief. So the car never left Los Angeles. He bought it from a dealership in, I believe, Sacramento, and it was close by. And so he flew in, the buyer was in Houston, and he flew into LA with this tracking information and boldly went to the address where the car was. Now, he did not see the car there, but he took his theft report and the tracking reports and everything and went to a local police department. And this is after he had contacted California Highway Patrol, LA County Sheriff's Office, et cetera, et cetera. Nobody was any help, unfortunately. I have a friend that's retired from San Bernardino Sheriff's Office. He was trying to help, calling all of his friends that were still on the force and the auto theft task force, etc. And they basically all were like, yeah, gee, I wish I could do something, but can't.
Were they just like busy with other more important things, or just is this such a hard thing to crack down on? Or
I think it's so common, and just a combination of that being short-staffed, politics, et cetera, but the victim was very, very frustrated with the lack of law enforcement involvement in being able to recover this. But he did go into the local station and basically just said, I need you to help me come get this car. So they went there, knocked on the door, and it was basically at a local house that had kind of a repair shop in the back. And I don't know that they were necessarily the thieves. That's just where the car ended up. It seems like there's just this giant chain of people marginally involved in these car thefts happening. So as far as he knows, no arrests were made, and the cops didn't bother to get a warrant either. They just knocked on the door and they were able to search the property and lo and behold, the car was there.
So this wasn't an operation like in No Man's Land, the wonderful 80s movie where they steal Porsches, where it's like a whole chop shop where they bring them in and they tear them to pieces and it's like everybody's in on it and a couple of people get shot and a whole...
No, nobody got shot.
Okay, the car was... It's a great movie, though.
Torn to pieces. It was a little banged up on the outside, but inside a bunch of interior trim panels had been taken off, the passenger airbag. I guess that they were probably looking for the GPS device, assuming that there was one there, and trying to disable that. And they were obviously unsuccessful. That's how they found the car. And or, you know, maybe trying to remove things that had the VIN number. I don't know. Yeah. So anyway, he got the car. We made a call to our friends at JP Logistics, which is a wonderful, legitimate transport company. They had a rollback there within hours. They have a great first-class facility in Los Angeles. This is not a sponsored anything. This is just, he's like, do you know any transport company that can help me out? Because the car is broken. It's in limp mode, whatever. Like, it won't run.
Yeah, like, help.
So we need to get this car out of there. So they have a headquarters in LA. They put it in their enclosed storage facility, and then a couple days later had it delivered to Dallas to the Ferrari dealer. So yeah, wonderful. They were great. The guy kept asking me, he's like, do you trust this transport company like 100,000%? And I was like, listen, transport companies aren't perfect. That, like, things may not go perfectly, but they won't steal your car. I can guarantee you that. So it's the, you know, low bar.
Dude's got trauma now. He's going to be so sketched by any other time he needs to ship a car.
Right. So anyway, the good news is he got the car back. The bad news is there was no big, like, sting operation. No theft ring was, you know, busted up. The other bad news is it may be totaled anyway because of all the parts and software and programming and crap that's needed now. So kind of a sour taste for somebody buying their dream car. Yeah.
This is covered under insurance, though, right?
In theory, yes.
Okay. Yeah. It's not some weird thing, like, because the shipping company did, because I know you've talked before that, like, if damage happens in transit, which this, you could maybe argue one way or the other, but, like, that can be, weird with insurance.
Theft, yes. Right. Okay. So he has a police report. It's so a legitimate theft. So, yes, that's covered. It's up to the insurance company to make that determination, not me. But I would assume that it's covered.
I would hope so. Godspeed.
Yes. It's also why you should add insurance the day you pay for your car. A lot of customers call me and they paid for their car like a week ago. They're like, well, when's it get shipped out? In a couple of weeks. Well, do I add insurance like when it gets here? I'm like, no, you should have added it already. The money's left your account. It's your car. So, okay. How does this not happen?
By paying a reputable company to do this and not trying to skimp on the dollars.
How do you find a reputable company?
I don't know.
All brokers look reputable online.
You go to any big car event, like, there's a bunch of trucks from, like, Reliable and there's like three or four massive ones that do all the big, just go with them.
But they're super expensive. Often their communication is poor. Sometimes going with a smaller outfit is better.
That's true.
Right? Better level of service. And these brokers all appear to be giant operations. However, they're not. They're usually just a single office working out of their apartment, whatever. There is a way to prevent this. This isn't hard. So we got to unpack how this happened to tell you how to not have it happen. If you are a transport broker listening or a dealer, pay attention, because this is your job to make this not happen, not the clients, not the customers. So in a nutshell, what happened was a legitimate broker who the customer found on, like, a Ferrari Club Facebook page or something like that, who came highly recommended, put the car on central dispatch, put the load on a load board. So a company, this was SCD Cargo, this we unpacked this last episode, who is a licensed company but not a real company. They have MC and DOT numbers.
Right?
Yep, so they accepted the load. They then used a different company that they had, which was a licensed broker, and put it on a different load board. I believe it was on Super Dispatch. So they posted this Ferrari that was supposed to go to Houston. They accepted the load from the first broker. Then they posted it with their different broker name on a different load board, but it was from Los Angeles to Los Angeles. So they hired a legitimate carrier who had no idea he was essentially stealing a car to ship it from one place to their little, you know, from the dealer to their home base operation in Los Angeles. So it was a legitimate shipment by a legitimate shipper. I mean,
that's next
this
level.
Is so easy to prevent. It's so easy to prevent. One, the broker did not perform due diligence on SCD cargo. We unpacked them last week. I mean, it was so easy to see that they were a sham company. Two, the broker did not send the information on the truck, trailer, and company name and the pickup and delivery information to the dealer where the car was being picked up. Because if they had, then the dealer can say, okay, I'm looking for this truck, this license number, this company name, and I know what delivery address is supposed to be on the bill of lading. If those two things had happened, this vehicle would not have been stolen. At least not in this scenario. The dealer itself did not take it upon themselves to check the bill of lading. That would have been real easy. Like, oh yeah, this guy from Houston bought the car from us, but why is it being delivered to this random address in Los Angeles? That sounds fishy. Like when a truck shows up to our shop, if we didn't book the truck, we call the broker or the customer and say, here's who's here to pick up your truck. This is the company name. This is a picture of the truck. Is this who you booked?
And you do that with everyone?
If it's coming through a third party, we assume that they're probably maybe illegitimate. And we had this happen the other day. We sent a truck away because they showed up. The door on the trailer was missing for one, but they didn't have any markings. The guy like pulled out his magnetic thing and stuck it on the side after he showed up. And I'm like, why isn't your thing on there? He goes, oh, it's the weather. You know, it could come off. I'm like, really? Are you trying to skip the weigh station? Like you're trying to avoid DOT. He's like, what?
No,
go use your bathroom.
Yeah.
So
suddenly very nervous.
Yeah. It's three really, really easy steps to not have your car stolen. Brokers, do your job. Dealers, do your job. Protect the customer. And like this won't happen. I've railed against transport brokers over and over and over again, and they just need to be gone from the industry, but they won't be. Unfortunately, they just can't be. There's too many small owner operator, small operation truckers that can't manage, you know, dealing with the customers. The brokers essentially act as the dispatching arm for these small companies, but they're not doing their job. And this could change. We could stop all transport thefts if essentially the brokers just adopted standardized best practices. Like, I'll write it up for you guys, right? Charge you like $100 subscription a year or something. Like, this is not hard. This is not hard. We don't even have to go arrest everybody. Just stop the opportunity. If you stop the flow of money, the crime goes away. They'll find something else to steal.
Yeah, and I just, because obviously we don't want to stop using central dispatch, because then those smaller like owner operators who are legitimate, who are just doing their job, like they wouldn't have the access to loads or whatever else. But like,
no, I'm fine with stopping using central dispatch.
Well, you can for you. That's fine. But I feel like, too, I don't know. It takes extra. Any time that I have told somebody to do something, it takes extra time to do their job correctly. It's usually there's a bit of friction. I feel like people are like, just get it out the door. Bah, it's probably fine. Bah, you know, whatever. Bah, there's insurance. Any of that kind of crap.
Yes. Well, unfortunately, the brokers don't have insurance. So you could say there's insurance, but like.
Well, they're assuming there's like insurance on the other end.
Well, yeah.
For like the trucker.
But they don't verify it. Or they think they do, but. Okay. Sure, anyway. Negotiator. What do we got?
Alrighty. Okay, so this comes to us, looks like from Beaters and Ricers on, I think, Instagram, which is in a screenshot of something for Facebook Marketplace. Buckled in. Okay,
legitimate, reliable source.
100%. There's a couple of layers. It's a game of telephone.
Just like transporters.
This is a stock GXP Solstice, which was taken by the original owner to Wade's Garage in Virginia for the conversion to a Solbra. Do you know what a soul bra is, Doug?
A soul bra?
No. S-O-L. Oh, yeah, that is soul bra.
That's an unfortunate name for a car.
It sounds like it's not a good name. So they combined a couple of things. Let's stick with me and we'll figure this out. Powered by a 4, and then they spell out 4, cylinder, 2.0 liter Ecotec turbo, 260 horsepower engine, stock from the factory, then upped to 300 with GM performance parts. Also by the original owner.
Like tune and exhaust?
Probably.
So like 265 horsepower.
Yeah.
Got it.
They're the second owner, car's real head turner, and while not one of a kind, it's truly unique, which, you know, I can appreciate that they're not trying to pull like a Corvette owner on me. They're like, hey, this car's pretty unique, but it's not one of one.
I'm still stuck on soul bra.
We'll get there. Stick with me, Doug.
Could be a legitimate brand of like organic, you know, material.
I'm going to need
support systems.
We're staying focused on the topic. This is a vehicle. Doug.
Okay.
We'll get there.
All right. Why is it called the soul bra?
So it's a Pontiac Solstice. Okay. So the SOL.
Okay.
This company has converted it to look, if you squint really hard from 5 miles away, like a Shelby Cobra.
Oh.
So they put a big old round, like grill, not grill, but like opening on the front. They put like, they got like racing harnesses in these. They put V8s in some of them, but not this one. It is rough looking. Like it's yellow, bright yellow, but it has Shelby Cobra badging on the front. It has 427 on the sides.
The badging's crooked.
Yes, it is. Yeah. You got to tilt your head a little bit.
Real high quality installation there. The panel gaps are pretty crooked, too.
Somewhere in here, they say specifically that it's not a 427. Don't get your hopes up. Don't get excited.
Just the badges.
Oh, even the front badge is like tilted.
What is this? Is that a boomer board?
Oh, yes. There is a laminated sheet of paper in here. Pontiac Solstice GXP Solbra, number 003.
Of 004. Only 4 people that wanted that thing. So how much are they asking for this thing that doesn't look or sound like a Cobra?
Well, they're asking a whole $23,000.
Yeek.
For a Pontiac Solstice with a bad body kit on it.
Yeek.
Look at this panel gap right here, Doug. It's like it extends. It's like an acute angle. So bad.
Oh, dear.
Actually, Doug, I think Ethan has been looking at he's been thinking about a convertible.
Ooh.
We could pull some money out of the Switchcast war chest and get him rolling in style.
I want to offer the guy like $8,000, though.
I know. This is worth it. It's so bad.
Awesome.
But honestly, I found the website for these guys. It looks like it was made in like 2004. Like, and it's just never been updated.
Steve Saleen had input on that design and build.
So. Yikes. Nuts for Sticks is a brand celebrating the manual transmission in all its forms. So forget those flappy paddles because we like shifting ourselves. Check out our fun and funny stick theme shirts at nutsforsticks.com and save 10% on your order using the discount code SWITCHCAST. That's nutsforsticks.com and use code SWITCHCAST.
So we talked about transporters stealing cars. Let's talk about automotive dealer scam, because that's one of my favorite topics.
Really closing out the year well. We're talking about scams. We're talking about stealing. We've got so much.
Right. I think the next segment is something about the same.
Oh, my God. All right.
There's so much. There's so many.
We might get typecast, things. Doug.
Switchcast. Yes. Switch typecast. Readautos.net. Our friend of the podcast, John Sabo, sent this over. He had a client try to hire him to go buy a car from this quote-unquote dealership.
I mean, I'm scrolling through the inventory right now, Doug. They got some legit stuff. There's an F8, a couple of 911s, a couple of Cybertrucks. There's an E-Ray.
How much is that Ferrari F8 Tributo, Tyler?
Boy, only $128,000. My goodness, whoa. I might be able to swing that.
Yeah.
Good GT3s, deal. Get out of here. Let me get in an F8. Can you bring this here for me, Doug? I don't know. You have connections, right?
Sure. Let's go to Peculiar Minnesota, Missouri, and just go buy it.
Yeah, perfect.
Right. So this is a really, really old trick, but apparently it's still getting people because people want to believe that deals that appear too good to be true aren't. Now, I don't know if this is just naivete or greed or what, but like, it's not that hard to spot a scam website. So the number one thing is when you have cars priced at essentially a half or a third of their market value, that is the very, very obvious red flag. In fact, good scammers price them at like maybe 10% below market value. So they get people excited thinking, oh, this is a great deal, but it's not too good to be true. The other one is, I mean, just patently obvious. Their addresses almost never come back to like what they appear to be online.
I'm also noticing now, scrolling through all of these, as my dreams are dashed and I'm depressed, all of these photos are taken in very obviously not the same area.
Correct.
Like, not just like, oh, they use a couple of different parking lots. Like, this is very obviously, like, this one's in a dude's driveway. Like,
correct. Scam, maybe so scam. They're essentially stealing photos from other dealerships and from Bring a Trailer, Cars and Bids, any closed auction listings, and relisting them as if they have the car. Their address, when you Google Street View it, comes back to a manufacturing headquarters for Sioux Chief. Very definitely not a dealership at all. Some of them are smart enough to actually take over essentially an address from a defunct dealership. So when you Google it, like, that dealer name and address comes up as a dealer, but often when you Street View it, it's like a corner gas station and it hasn't been in business for 5 years. So it is, you know, dilapidated and not a place that would be selling Lamborghinis and Ferraris. However, people still fall for this stuff.
Oh my gosh, the financing page is so weird.
Thankfully, they don't ask for your social security number on there. It's not like an actual credit application.
But they're very specific that they say the first payment is always $15,000. But don't worry, the terms and the rates and the, oh, it's all customized just for you.
Yes.
So weird.
You can also reverse image search any of their photos. The easiest one is their main dealer photo, which shows this giant warehouse full of cars, and that was taken from XYZ Motors up in Michigan. And of course, the rest of their photos are stolen as well. Right. So how do they steal money from people? Usually they just have you send a deposit for the car, and the cars are perpetually available, and they get deposits in 500 or 1,000 or 5 grand from thousands of people that think, oh yeah, no big deal, it's just a $500 deposit, I'll fly in and see it, and then they skip town and run. Some of the more ambitious scammers will get you to wire money or send a cashier's check for the entire amount. Really good scammers will have VIN numbers and Carfaxes for their cars and will actually get photocopies of titles, and they'll edit them in Photoshop so they look legitimate. I've seen that. I've had somebody send me a copy of a fake title before for a Mercedes that they were trying to scam me on. But the crazy thing is, right, is I tried leaving them one-star reviews with multiple Google accounts, and other people did too. And this scam website is somehow getting reviews removed from Google. So they have no reviews, which is kind of frustrating because, like, I, as a legitimate operation, can't get illegitimate reviews removed on my account. But, like, we're leaving reviews that are like, this place is a scam. They've stolen photos from this site, from that site, whatever. And they're getting them removed somehow. Now, I'm sure they'll eventually get taken down, but this website's been up for like 3-4 weeks, which is pretty crazy for a scam operation. I'm sure there's listeners out there who are quite internet savvy and can follow the steps to get the dealer site shut down, because you can do that. The law enforcement is probably going to move way too slowly to do anything, and the person's overseas anyway, so there's nothing to, like, there's no raid to happen, right? You're not going to go to the Sioux Chief headquarters and be like, hey, you guys are where are all the cars?
Do you know what you're participating in?
Right. But
they don't have any reviews. That's kind of wild.
Right, because they're only bad reviews. So they're just getting them removed, like, almost as soon as they get put up. I just came up with a theory.
Yes.
Maybe all these cars that are getting stolen by transporters are just getting sold super cheap to these scam dealers. and they're using the photos of the cars when they were listed prior and just selling them off cheap. And they're like, they exist. They're just at some random warehouse somewhere else.
And it's like, is there like a number of people they need to scam out of deposits before they finally just sell the car? It's like a lottery. It's like, ooh, are you going to lose $5,000 or are you going to get a F8 for $120?
So anyway, if you see a website, even if they look legitimate, if the cars are way underpriced, it's major red flag. Oh, they also have, this is another major red flag, they have a simple return guarantee, so you can shop worry-free. This is another thing scammers do, is they try to give you this elevated level of confidence that doesn't exist in a normal transaction. Like, oh, we'll just deliver the car to your house free of charge, no big deal. And if you don't like it, you can just send it back. This dealer has a 30-day money-back guarantee on exotic cars. Bro, if this was legit, we could take advantage of free rentals for life.
Well, and there's also an option on this return page that says, if you're opting for an exchange, you can pick up two different cars, giving you the flexibility to find the perfect ride. What?
Yeah, no. Ain't no dealer on the planet that's doing that. Not happening. What is it? Carvana has like a 7-day return policy, and that's for like Toyota Camrys. So, yeah, not happening. Anyway, but they have a quote unquote real address and they have a real phone number. Get in touch with Reed Autos. So I'm going to call them up and see if we can buy a car.
You have fun with this, Doug. I am, I'm not going to participate.
816-934-5856. They say they're open till like 9 PM. So
they're there to serve you, Doug. That's what their website says.
Welcome to Verizon Wireless.
Oh no. No, somebody's got them. He didn't pay his bill.
So unfortunate.
He didn't pay his bill. I am so bummed. My friend talked to him last week. Like, he was actually on the phone with him.
Really?
They picked up their phone number, and like he texted him. He got VIN numbers. He sent him a Carfax. Like, I was thinking, man, we could have some real fun with him, because a lot of time these scam websites, you can only email them. And that's kind of how they get you.
We almost had a 2023 Porsche 911 Targa 4 GTS for $62,000, Doug.
So close.
I was going to offer to buy the whole lot of inventory.
I'll take them all.
I did send them an email a couple weeks ago, actually, claiming to be an attorney representing somebody who wanted to buy out their business for multiple millions of dollars. They didn't respond.
We should probably tell them that when we're buying all these, they can keep the Cybertrucks. There's like two or three of them in here.
Honestly, the Cybertrucks look kind of like overpriced.
They do. I was going to say like
$100,000, right?
Yeah, one of them's 100. The other one's like, I don't know, 85. That seems reasonable enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Darn it.
Boy, howdy.
Man. Well, we'll have to see if they have another phone number because I definitely want to see what we can do. I was going to offer to send them a cashier's check for more than the amount and have them send me a cashier's check back for my shipper's agent.
Oh,
like the reverse scam.
Because
that's what, you know, if you list a car on Marketplace or Craigslist or something, that's always what they pull on you. They send you a fake cashier's check and then you send the money back for their shipper's agent. So they send it for more than the amount you're asking for the car. And then by the time you realize that their cashier's check is fake, it's too late.
Your money is gone.
Your money is gone.
Womp womp.
So, womp womp. Well,
is there some sort of like Robin Hood thing in like scamming scammers? I guess if you like donate the money or something, it's like technically probably illegal still, but
it's really difficult. It's really difficult. There's been a couple YouTubers that have succeeded, but like they're too smart. Like even wasting their time is like you drag it out for a while and then they get tired of it and they're like on in the next one because they're really going for the low hanging fruit.
For sure.
So if they don't think that they have you on the hook, they're going to move on. So, yeah. Well, with that said, readautos.net. Go spam their Google business page so they can't keep up with the negative reviews. And maybe we can at least get their website pulled down. It looks like somebody already got their phone number pulled down, which is a huge bummer.
What is interesting is there is a readauto.com for a legitimate automotive group also in Missouri.
Correct.
So it's like, it's not in Peculiar or anything, but it is like a very close website. It's in Missouri. So it's like they did some research.
Yes. And that's another one of their tactics is they will use like names to companies that are in that general area. So if you search for something close to that, you'll find this large auto group and maybe get them conflated and, again, get a false level of security. The good news is, though, if you search for Reed Autos in peculiar Missouri, even though my Google review got taken down, the second result under their website is my video from Instagram talking about how they're a scam. So they can't take that down.
That's what I'm talking about.
Heck yes.
Unfortunately, Reed Automotive Group doesn't have any great deals on Lamborghini Huracan Evos, but there's a Hyundai Elantra on here that seems reasonably priced.
I'm going to try just once more, just because I feel like I dialed the wrong number. It's got to be. I can't let that go. It's a me problem.
The error was between the chair and the phone. The problem was
816-934-5856. Please be there. Please be there.
I'm feeling good about it this time.
Welcome to Verizon.
Pay the bill.
Maybe it's because I did the *67. Maybe that's not a thing anymore.
Oh, you want this bad.
Well, I didn't want a scammer to have my actual number. It is the *67.
It's about to get good. Oh, man, I can't wait.
Suspense, and it's going to be a voicemail. We're going to be 0 for 2 here. We couldn't get Wayne Barrett, the Sovereign Citizen, on the line. Now we can't get the scammers.
If you leave them a message, don't give your actual phone number. Or Ethan, edit it out this time.
Hello, and thank you for calling Reed Autos. Please leave a message with your name and contact information.
Hello.
One of our experts.
I did not expect that.
Get back as soon as possible. Thank you for choosing Reed Autos.
Hi, yes. I'm at a hotel in Kansas City. I came in with my entourage, and I have a couple $1 million in cash. I hope you accept cash. I just wanted to know what time you open tomorrow. I wanted to come by and buy a lot of vehicles from you. Very serious buyer. And want to make sure you have the proper security there as well. So please give me a call back. Thank you.
Nice. You didn't leave your number. You've learned.
Apparently, *67 doesn't work anymore. Who would have?
Was that to like prevent some caller? Like,
yeah, it's like the blocking the caller ID.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's the first time I've ever used it, and apparently the last. This episode is brought to you by Sheffield All Sport Watches. The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jay Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield All Sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one in July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid back in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield watches, value on merit, not just price. I love mine. Get yours at SheffieldWatches.com and mention that you heard about them on Switchcast. Okay, so we talked about transporter scams, a dealer scam, and now bespoke motor maybe scam.
Scam.
That was a scam might be a bit of an intense word to describe this.
Okay, sure. A lot of people think it is. Radford Motors, which is a Restomod Lotus Type 62.
Sucks.
It sucks.
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 Oh, the peanut gallery.
You got to speak louder.
Say it quieter.
So, you're sus. They have filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy. The chapter is important because, of course, a bunch of people are coming out with pitchforks, basically saying, oh, man, how are you still posting on Instagram? Because the founder still is. And, you know, they're still promoting the company like you guys are bankrupt. It's bankrupt doesn't mean the same thing every time, depending on what chapter you file. So Chapter 11 is a restructuring of debt so that the company can continue operations by, well, moving its debt around. So it doesn't go away. It just makes the payments more manageable. Not unsurprising for yet another startup, six to seven figure vehicle operation, but somehow it still keeps happening. In addition to the bankruptcy filing, now a number of customers are suing Radford Motors to try to get their deposits back. This information comes to us via carscoops.com. Jalopnik also posted the article, but they essentially just quoted Car Scoops and added a little bit of editorial commentary, kind of like we're doing.
Left wing.
What?
One such lawsuit filed in July 2024 involves a Florida surgeon and Lamborghini Palm Beach. They claim that they paid $300,000 for a street legal Lotus Radford Type 62-2 and an additional $750,000 for the track only Pikes Peak model, with no vehicle delivered yet. Yet.
These are really attractive, though, Doug.
They do look
so good.
They do look good. Another prospective customer is also suing Radford for a $101,000 deposit that he placed in May of 2022. He was told the first deliveries would begin in late 2022 and finish in 2023. He should have known with these bespoke companies that timeline is subject to change, right? When you start up a company, that people always say everything takes twice as long and costs twice as much as you plan, and you'll make half as much as you think. These customers forgot that that principle. Plaintiff alleges that Radford would be providing him with a full refund, but he has yet to receive any funds back. Wow. They've also had internal lawsuits. This is where it gets murky. In March, Radford business partner Pastor Velasco, not like a Baptist minister, but that's his first name.
Pastor Velasco.
Filed a lawsuit against Art Anstead, and co-founder Daniel Bednarski, claiming he's owed over $2 million. Radford co-owner Roger Biller Jr. also filed a lawsuit alleging that Anstead and co-founder Daniel Bednarski have mismanaged company funds. So apparently the company has been in court five times already to address these civil suits, and every time the judge has cited insufficient evidence for these claims. And then the suits have been dismissed. Here's what's confusing to me. Well, here's one of the big red flags. We've got co-owners, co-founders, business partners. There's a lot of names here with different titles, all suing each other. And they're all supposedly owners, founders, partners, something like that, which it's just not a good way to start. Now, I know it takes a lot of money to manufacture a car, but when you have a whole lot of, you know, people with their fingers in the pot, there's a saying, I think it's Dave Ramsey's, or he stole it from somebody else, the only ship that won't sail is a partnership. And especially when you're making cars where almost everything that can go wrong will, it's kind of a bad recipe off the bat.
I'm reading through an article here that's from Auto Week that is a slightly different perspective, you know, really just saying kind of what you pointed out already, that the co-owners or the Dan and
co-owner, founder, partners.
All of those, you know, a couple of those folks are, it's a debt restructuring. We're still making cars. We're still going forward. We feel very positive about the future. But there's also some stuff in here that I guess some of the lawsuits have stated they've used funds from deposits for things other than car production, which they're saying is absolutely false. And, you know, the suits have been dismissed. So who knows what's actually going on? But there's a little bit of the cooks that are in the kitchen, of the, which there's many, they're fighting.
Daddy needs a new Rolex.
It's not looking great from the outside, but they are not alone. There are a lot of companies that have done this in the past. Steve Saleen is a great example of that.
I wonder what they're up to.
Another one is Di Tommaso and their new P72. We covered that on an older episode of the podcast. There's a lot of smoke there. And some pretty hefty allegations, including a lawsuit by a former employee. And there are some articles in January of 2023 from different reputable media outlets that said that Di Tommaso is going to start deliveries in late 2023. And then there's a whole bunch of articles in January of 2024. Apparently, Di Tommaso put out another press release stating that deliveries would start in late 2024. So it's like literally you go to January of each year and you can pull up the same articles. And if you don't have a date, they look the same, but they're a year apart. Di Tommaso, according to their website, is assembling P72 number 001. According to another source of mine, it is just a prototype car. So there are zero customer deliveries completed, or as far as we know, in progress at this time for Di Tommaso, which is sad because I think that is the most beautiful modern supercar to exist. I really, really want that to come to fruition. And it's got a Coyote motor and a manual transmission, which the concept car had. A sequential manual, paddle shift, whatever. Not exciting. I can't afford one anyway, so it doesn't matter. But
so pretty, though. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, it's so
good.
A
lot of these companies make gorgeous, just incredible things. Well, they say they're going to make gorgeous, incredible things, and then they go bankrupt or they can't find the money. But it's like, oh, my God. There's even the... I mean, now, I don't know. This company seems successful, but I love the Revology Mustangs. Mm-hmm. That's like... Here, we're going to make it look exactly like a 60s Mustang, but it's going to be all modern stuff. It's going to be all brand new. It's going to be way higher quality.
But they're delivering cars.
They
cars
are.
Exist.
Yes, they are
cars
absolutely
exist.
Delivering cars.
I think it's harder to do one from scratch. And this might hurt the people who have lost money to Radford or Steve Saleen or Di Tommaso or is it Di Tommaso? Any of these companies, but... The lawsuits to me are a little bit in bad taste, right? So I don't want anyone to lose their money. And I feel like people should get some sort of justice. However, these are usually seasoned business people because they're successful enough to make this kind of money. Well, except the surgeon, you know, he just operates on people. But Well, no, I'm saying like historically, doctors, surgeons, etc., are not good with managing money.
Oh, yeah,
like
yeah,
it's
yeah,
a statistic.
Yeah.
I'm not being unkind. That is just a statistic.
It's
like restaurants are most likely to fail of any business type, right? I'm not mad at chefs. It's just that's what it is. So... A complete startup company, especially when two of the partners are a race car driver and a TV personality, and they're just creating a $1 million car from scratch, and you're like, yeah, sure, take $500,000 of my money, and I hope a car comes. You have to at least sign up a little bit for the risk there, right? Like, when you invest in the stock market, when you invest in a business, any type of thing like that, you understand there's a risk of loss. I feel like when you put down a six-figure deposit for a car that doesn't exist, for a company that started within the, you know, the ink is still dry on the incorporation papers, it should come with the same disclaimer. Like, we'll probably lose your money. We're probably going to deliver cars to, like, the next round of people that put deposits down, and we're going to use your money to develop the cars, and you're going to lose $500,000 bucks, and just that's how it goes. So... I don't know. I would never, ever put money down to one of these companies because I just, like, no way. Like, look at Spyker. I mean, there's so many different examples of companies that just took everybody's money and went bust that, I don't know. It's hard for me to feel totally bad for these people that are suing Radford. Just a little bit.
Well, it's like, could they just not wait? They're like, no, I got to be the first one to have this new thing. It's so cool, whatever. But there's, like you've been saying, there's a risk that comes to that.
Right.
You need to accept that.
I mean, Elon Musk took $100 deposits for the Cybertruck. That's, say what you want about Teslas, about Elon, about that whole thing. That's how it's done. Now, granted, he took like, you know, a million deposits or something. Like, he funded the creation of an entire car.
And it was late.
That was the reverse scam.
And it wasn't exactly what he said it was going to be.
Fine. But he delivered cars. And if he didn't, he refunded all the deposits. So anyway, but and then there's a whole nother thing here that's probably a whole nother podcast episode. But what's crazy to me, and I'm curious how many of these companies are going to go bankrupt. Some of them are fine. They're existing. They're delivering cars. They're great, like Revology. But there's so many recent restomod companies, bespoke automotive companies, just cranking out or taking people's deposits and the promise of cranking out high six-figure or low seven-figure cars that I'm like, I can't even keep up with all of them. I can't even keep up. So there's Evoluto Automobili doing the Ferrari 355 restomods, Eccentrica doing the Lamborghini Diablo, ruining it, in my opinion. There's Touring Superleggera with the Ferrari 550 restomod. There's the Bizzarini 5300 GT Corsa Revival, which is like $4 million. I was at a car show and I asked him how much. And I'm like, if it's like a million, I'm going to sell the Diablo and just take a loan against the house, not tell Aaron.
Oh, they're so good looking.
Yeah.
Aaron, it would have been worth it. Don't worry.
They told me that I couldn't afford one when I just walked up. They just got the vibe. No, sorry, sir.
If you have to ask, Doug, you can't afford it.
You got Ring Brothers, which is kind of like a Revology doing muscle cars. You got Alphaholics. You got the Lancia Delta Integrale Futurista. You got the Chimera 037. You've got Mechatronics doing the Mercedes SLs. You've got Canepa doing the Porsche 959 SC. You've got Tuthill doing the GT1, which, side note, is the greatest modern, like, interpretation of a classic car.
It looks so good.
The best supercar on the planet. I wish I could afford one of those. I would buy one of those. And Tuthill is a reputable country. You got Singer doing the Porsche 911s reimagined. You got Roof doing, well, Roofs.
And those are all so cool.
They are all so
and
cool.
So much
but it's just like a million here, a million there, a million there. Like, how many people are out there wanting to buy these one-off million-dollar resto mods?
Like, and it is kind of like, where does all this come from? Like, is it all the same people just buying all of these for clout or something? Or
I don't know. But I would argue, out of the ones that are starting up now, I would say probably 50% of them are going to go bust.
Yeah.
So I feel like we need to revisit this in a couple years and see if any De Tomasos have been delivered or any Radfords.
Yes.
And see how some of these restomod companies go, too.
Alrighty, well, I think that brings us to the props and flops of the week, brought to you by Switch Cars. And Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, and consign only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com and mention Switchcast for special pricing. You can find more information at switchcars.com or you can visit the showroom in beautiful but cold and snowy and gray Twinsburg, Ohio.
It's just cold and gray today.
Yeah, it's actually
not snowy.
Anyway, so what's the flop of the week, Doug?
All right, flop of the week. Speaking of restomod companies, Ford has approved a restomod Mark I Escort built by Borum Motorworks. The headline on Haggerty, or the description is, quote, in an industry full of high-end restomod projects, what were we just talking about?
Yes.
England's Borum Motorworks has turned its attention to something a little more humble. So they're taking this car, updating everything with modern drivetrain, carbon fiber stuff, you know, quote unquote bespoke, the term that's now become ubiquitous. So it's literally undefined itself. But a little more humble, I don't know if that's accurate. An Escort Mark I, okay, it has a 10,000 RPM red line.
Yeah, it's pretty old. Yes. It looks so good.
It's going to drive awesome. But it starts at $350,000.
Oh my God. How is that humble?
That's not humble. That's not humble. 150, okay, I wouldn't buy it, but like, okay, there's a value proposition there.
Oh.
350, like, it's just getting crazy. People are just throwing numbers out, and they're just like, all right, $1 million.
And they're making, what, like 150 of these, so they're assuming they can find 150 people. They probably will. These are so cool, and it's like there's, you know, it's obviously there's the connection to Ford that they've, like, approved this, whatever. Some company needs to make something like this, but have it be, like, 60 to 100 grand. I know it can't be this high quality and this bespoke.
The engine probably is 100 grand in that car. Yeah, I get that. But
it doesn't have to be all this way.
For a third of the price, there's a company in England that's taking the Lotus Elise Series 1 and essentially retooling that car, re-engineering
it. Yeah.
And they're around, I think, 100 or low hundreds, which is a lot of money for an Elise S1. But it's like, okay, that or 3X that for a Mark I Escort. Yeah, I'll take the Lotus. Prop of the week, a resto mod that I think is awesome, the TWR Supercat.
Yes.
Yes. So this is Tom Walkinshaw Racing, which, if you know that name, you know that name. They've been involved in Jaguar Racing for a long time. XJ220, XJR15. Yes. They've won a lot of championships and series over in Europe. And let's see. Even with their race-prepped XJS. So in homage to that, they have built this carbon fiber-bodied V12, which the V12 will rev to 7,700 RPM.
Holy
650 horsepower, six-speed manual transmission, and a crazy, crazy body kit. Honestly, this is the direction that Jaguar should have rebranded to. That would have been awesome. And it was amazing timing because as Jaguar is rolling out their, you know, pink donut suits and stuff like that, TWR just drops this thing and be like, oh, yeah, you don't want to remember your past? Well, we got you.
I was watching Harry's Garage on YouTube. I feel like I've mentioned it before. Fantastic channel. Did an overview of this where he went to TWR, and they had the development mule there, which was just like a hacked up XJS with like essentially just like bent pieces of metal for the wide body kit, but it had this glorious engine just shoved into the front. And like even that, it's like this ratty, just, oh, God, that would even be amazing.
Heck, yes. And the price. So they're making 88 of them. And the starting price is just under $300,000, which is incredible value. It's 50 grand less than
reasonable.
An Escort.
Yeah, look at that.
Reasonable.
Yeah. So, I mean, granted, it's 100 times the price of a used Jaguar XJS in ratty condition, but, you know, I think it's the best value for the money in the resto mod world right now. And TWR has a long history. I don't think they're going to be ones that will take your deposit and go run away with it. Thank you for joining us for Switchcast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. Switchcast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.